Welcome to the Stop Faking Fine podcast, a show that will empower you to finally show up for yourself while your circumstances may not be 100% your fault. Your life is 100% your responsibility. It's time to stop faking fine. I'm your host, Dana Lewis, and I'm super excited to share this next episode with you. I met Trisha Thyrie on another podcast for widows, and we instantly became friends. Trisha is a mom and educator who lives in the Fort Worth area, and we are going to unpack healing through widowhood and when is the right time to date. As a former military wife turned widow, she is thankful for all the Lord has taught her about choosing joy through these difficult seasons, and we're going to talk through all of the things regarding dating after loss. See you on the inside. I am so excited to share my next guest with you. Trisha and I met, well, Trisha, welcome to the show, first of all.
Thank you.
Trisha and I met through a widow organization, like from a friend of a friend, like the power of Instagram, which I think is amazing. And we very quickly became friends, your heartfelt friends, widow to widow, but also Christian mama to Christian mama, just enjoying our friendship. And you guys, I cannot wait to unpack this conversation today because we're going to dive into when is it appropriate to date? Trisha, I'm so excited to have this conversation with you. But first, let's go back. Can you share with us just, you know, first and foremost, I'm always, my heart bleeds for every other widow that we know because this road is not a road that you would want to find friends on. Like it's not a road that you want to travel. Mm-mm. And it breaks your heart every time every time our paths cross with yet another widow. But there is something about having these friendships and learning and growing together that I thank God for.
Yes, absolutely.
I am super excited that you are here to just share with everyone our knowledge, but can you share with us like a little bit about your story and how you unfortunately became on this path?
Yeah, absolutely. I always say that I love meeting widows, but I hate that it's something we have in common. Mm-hmm. It's like this giant club that, you know, needs community and you need people that have this in common, but you don't want anyone else to have to join it. Like, mm-hmm. it's not a group that you ever want to say, oh, I really wish I could be a part of that.
No, you don't.
It's not the kind of club you want to join, but you do need all of those people. And it's one of those things that those people that you have something in common with them, even if there's nothing else that you have in common with them, mm-hmm. that you can relate to them. And yeah, it is the widow journey. So I met my husband way back in, 2003, and we got married in 2006. He was in the military. He was in the Army Special Forces. And so we got married and we moved around a lot. That was one of the things I said I was never going to do. I grew up as a military brat. And I said, I want to live in one place. Right. I am going to marry somebody and stay close to home. And yeah, he referred to himself as a stalker success story because he knew what he wanted. He'd prayed about it. He told God the first Sunday he saw me at church and he was going to keep going until he got it.
So, I love it. He wore you down.
He did. And I was super lucky to get him. So we moved around. We, went from New York to Georgia, back to Tennessee, back to New York. And during that process, we had several years of struggling with infertility and we had a set of twins. And right before our twins' first birthday, he left for Afghanistan and came back. And within a week of returning, was having seizures. And so we found out at that time that he had a brain tumor. Mm-hmm. And he had that operated on right after our twins' first birthday. And they told us at that time that because of the aggressive type of tumor it was, that he probably would only have 18 months to 2 years with treatment. but that treatment would leave him mentally handicapped. And so made the decision at that time to follow some natural, more untraditional routes of treating it, as mm-hmm. opposed to following the traditional route. And things went really well for a couple of years. He had thought he'd have to get out of the military and he didn't. We went back to New York where he taught at West Point and was a calculus professor. And it was around the 3-year mark that the tumor had come back enough that he needed to have a second resection done. And after that, he ended up medically discharged from the military. And so we moved to Ohio to be close to his family and for our kids to be close to their cousins. And so in the summer of 2017, when our twins were 5 and a second baby was 3, he ended up getting really sick. I took him to the VA hospital to get IV seizure meds, and he had a seizure and passed away in the hospital there.
Oh my gosh. I am so, like, the story just never gets easier. And I'm sure if you're listening and you are a widow, you can resonate with that. Like, my heart feels for you and for your babies and for your husband and just for a life. Again, you guys, it's a life that you did not intend to live. Now we're on this path of widowhood without the father to our children and the partner that we intended to live the rest of our lives with. And we just have to have pause and grace for that. And I applaud you, as I applaud myself, for kind of picking ourselves up by the bootstraps and saying, okay, we're going to move forward. And through that process of moving forward, there are so, so many things that we can unpack and talk about. So stay tuned, because we are going to continue having all of these conversations because they're worth discussing. But you met your first husband in church, right?
Yeah.
And he was like, I'm going to marry her. This is going to be my bride. I met my first husband in college, in a normal situation where we kind of became sweethearts and then dated all through college and then got married and, you know, fairy tale kind of until the end. But let's fast forward to right now. So I'm 10 years post, what do you even call that? Post loss?
I mean, it's still a loss. It's still ongoing, but
But it's 10 years to the date. Well, very close to the date for me. And it's 6 for you, correct?
Yes. Yep. August was 6 years for us.
Oh, I forgot. It's August for both of us. Yes. August of 2013 for me. But the question becomes, and here's, like, let's get into the meat of it. Like, when is the right time to kind of say, okay, I'm going to open my heart to move forward? How would you answer that, Trisha?
That is a great question. I think it's different for everyone. And I think for some people, they may never reach the point where that's what they want. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. I knew for me, having, you know, a 3-year-old and 2 5-year-olds, that was something that I wanted. I wanted to marry again. I loved being married. I loved being a wife. I liked having a partner to do life with. Mm-hmm. And so I knew that pretty early on, and Ben had been sick for a long time when we lost him. And while I couldn't think about replacing him, because there isn't a replacement. That's not the way it works. And that, I think, is what people have a hard time with, is, you know, what's too soon, or when are you supposed to date again? And I think the question is whether or not you've done the healing that you need to in order to date again.
Yes, that is such a good nugget.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Because I know widows who have, you know, started dating again within like 6 months and are remarried within a year. And they did all that work. They did the heavy grieving. They, you know, did the grief programs. They worked through their grief, and they know that that loss moves forward with them. And they were able to go into a new relationship with that, and also with a partner who understands loss and grief and accepts that first spouse is still a part of it.
There are so many like gold mines. You just like so many things to unpack out of that conversation. And
yeah.
I do think that my perception at this stage is that there are two really different paths when your husband is sick for a very long time and you had the opportunity to embrace that conversation. I think that that helps our brains kind of move forward in that regard. For me, we never had that conversation. Like he got sick in July of 2013, or rather we became aware of the fact that he had stage 4 cancer in July of 2013. And by August of 2013, he passed away. So there was nowhere in that 6-week process did we have a conversation about if I'm not here. The conversation was, I'm going to get help. I'm going to get help. We're changing doctors. We're changing plans. We're doing holistic. We're doing this. I was busy trying to solve the problem. So when I came out of that, I was literally like, am I on candid camera? Like what is happening right now? Like I'm going home. I don't have babies or I don't have a husband. I have 3 babies. Like my boys were 6, 8, and 10. And it was like thinking about dating wasn't even on my radar, let alone try to talk about when was the correct date. But I have the funniest thing, like as you talk about like the silly things that people say to you, I remember coming home from the hospital. My mother-in-law and I were both at the hospital. And I came home as soon as he had passed because I was like, I cannot handle this situation. I'm leaving. And she came home shortly thereafter. And one of the very first interactions we had, she was like, Dana, just make sure that you don't date. You should not date anyone until your boys are in college. Those are my words of wisdom for you.
Yeah.
And I was like, are you kidding me right now? Like we're talking, my husband literally died. Your son died minutes ago. And you're giving me advice on what I do in my next chapter. Like, I was like, I can't even. And in that moment, I was so just like distraught and frustrated and like angry with her for sharing that. And now, 10 years later, I can kind of appreciate her heart that she was also grieving. And in that grief, your stress is high, you know, emotions are high. And you say things that you don't...
All the things you're thinking come out your mouth.
Right. But like you might mean them, but you don't mean to say it in the way that it comes out. So we've since then, you know, healed that relationship conversation, all the things. But like I was so taken back by that because dating was not on my radar. So when did you, like coming back to your story and your conversation, when did you feel like you had done the healing? What did that look like? And then, I mean, how many days was it? How many years was it before you went on a date? Give me all the goodness.
So for me, and talking about things people say at the visitation prior to my husband's funeral, I had 2 people that I did not even know come up and one, tell me I was very pretty and I'll remarry again. Oh. And the second, tell me my kids were really young and needed a dad, so I should think about remarrying.
Perfect.
And I was like,
totally appropriate things to say.
Like, there's a casket right next to me right now. Like, these are not things I need to hear from people I don't know.
Oh, like, I'm going to go home and bawl my eyes out. And you're telling me that I should like hit on the guy that's walking in? Like, no. And this is, we will unpack all the things that you can say, you can't, like, shouldn't say, like, maybe another day, but like, it's good intention, right?
It is.
Like, thank you for telling me that I'm pretty. Like, thank you.
And and I think too, and so I even had a brother-in-law that week tell me, you know, Trisha, we know that one day you might remarry. We want you to know you'll always be a part of this family. And even then I was like, that's super sweet, but it's only like, this is not when I was not prepared for that. Looking back now, I think, you know, it was really big of him to take the time to say that to me in the midst of all of that, just so that I would know that if that was a fear in my mind, that I was not going to be a part of their family, that I that it was relieved before I even needed it.
Yeah. I can't appreciate that.
Yeah.
Right. The intention was at the moment,
it was not what I needed, like, but I appreciated hearing it from him. And now I look back and I think, man, I'm so grateful for, you know, the way some of my in-laws really loved me through, you know, grief and loss, and also choosing to date again. And so I would say for me, and I even had widow friends at the time who said that it was too soon for me. And then some of them got married before. Obviously I'm not married yet again, but they are married again. And I laugh because I'm like, you all thought I was super fast to start dating.
Yeah. But. Yeah. I think if we pause there for a second, it's like the judgment piece.
Yeah.
Like the judgment. And
we hope we do it to ourselves.
Yes. I hope that if you're listening, this is one takeaway from this conversation, that everyone has their own path in healing.
Mm-hmm.
And your projection to them, onto us as a widow, of this is the right time, the wrong time, or indifferent, mm-hmm. is really hurtful to our hearts are already broken. So allowing people the grace to just support whatever their decision is. And I'll come back to your brother-in-law and applaud him for saying that, like, even if the timing was not perfect, knowing that they love you and support you and they're going to love you regardless and that you're part of that family is amazing.
And they have continued to. So timing wise for me, I was about almost 5 months out when somebody that I knew from childhood started messaging me, and we had been friends online.
Mm-hmm.
First, they messaged just, you know, letting me know that they were praying for me and asking questions about, you know, my husband and things like that. And that those chats turned into phone chats. And then it was 6 and almost 7 months after losing him that we went out for the first time.
Mm-hmm. How was that? Tell us how was that?
You know, it was good. And I think that when you have lost somebody and you are missing that connection, that it is really easy to really long for that connection mm-hmm. to somebody.
And
when you've been married, you don't, it is a lot harder to take things like, oh, well, we'll just, you know, talk this once or twice a week and take things super slow. And sometimes it doesn't work quite the way that you, you would think.
Yeah.
As far as the grieving and being ready for dating at that point mm-hmm. in time, I know that was a concern of, you know, family and friends, because they knew I was still grieving pretty mm-hmm. heavy when I started talking to him.
Mm-hmm.
The difference being that I had done a lot of heart work mm-hmm. in that time frame. And I had someone tell me, like, you know, well, we wanted you to date, but we thought you would wait 5 years. And we don't know how you could get over him so quickly. And my answer was, I'm not over him. Like, it's not, you never get over, like, you can move forward, but you're not over it.
No. And I shouldn't be laughing, because it's a very serious,
it's
a very serious conversation. I can giggle about the comments because I'm 10 years out from the mm-hmm. comment, but 2 years out from that comment, I would cry.
Yeah.
I would absolutely cry, because I would be like, I'm over here trying my best and you're telling me that I'm not doing it right. And I don't have someone at home, my best friend.
That's the heart. Uh-huh.
My best friend.
To tell me that it's okay
yes.
for me to do things different than what, and that I think is the hardest part.
Mm-hmm.
Is because you have so many judgments coming at you
mm-hmm.
when you decide to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who would support you and say, no, you're doing what you have prayed about, thought about, like you feel is right. And it is okay for you to do that, even if everyone else doesn't agree, that person's gone. So that one person who has your back
It's not there.
You're dealing with all this judgment and feeling like you're doing things wrong and you're not pleasing anybody and that one person who always has you. So then it's like that whole grief cycle all over again because your person's not there. And then you start questioning your own judgment because everybody else is.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
You're like, am I screwing everything up? Am I messing my kids up? Am I doing things wrong?
And then you're on this hamster wheel of craziness. And it's how we even got to this podcast of Stop Faking Fine. Like that's how I got to this place because I was in that.
Mm-hmm.
1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, for me, 5 years, still overwhelmed, not done the healing because I don't know how to do the healing, missing. We were married for 15 years, dated for 7 before we got married. So 22 years of my life, he died at 40. So over half of my life was with the sidekick, my best friend, that was like, yes, Dana, do that. No, you know, yes, no, whatever. Not telling me what to do, but being my partner.
Yes.
And then not that we weren't both amazing individuals, because we were, but then you come together and you have magic, the secret sauce.
Yep.
And then you don't have that. And you're like, even though you go to dinner with someone and you're longing to have just an adult, because like you, your kids were 5 and 2, right?
5 and 3.
Yep. 5 and 3. Mine were 6, 8, and 10. So I have 3. You know, adolescent boys that are, I mean, you see the memes everywhere that are like, you know, you're a boy mom when, you know, people pee on the floor and, you know, do all this gross stuff and eat everything. And then just when you're at the point of breaking down, they give you a hug and like tell you that they love you. Yes. Mm-hmm. So it's like, this is where I'm living in this space where I have these 3 people that I love with my whole heart. And I was doing everything I could for them, despite the fact that I was crumbling on the inside. Mm-hmm. But then you go to dinner with someone and you see, then the next day, like for me, I would go to the gym and they'd be like, oh, I saw you were at dinner with John last night. Like, oh, yep. I heard from so-and-so that you were at so-and-so. And it's like, come on, y'all. Like, I just am over here trying to survive. And now you're like, well, are you guys in a relationship? What's happening? Mm-hmm. It's like, Nothing is happening. Like, I don't know.
Just a date for now.
I just am over here trying to survive. So you dated him for a while.
I did. Several years, actually.
Yeah.
And I just didn't have peace about moving forward into marriage. And so, and that was a really hard decision too, because he was great with my kids. He was great with me and he was very supportive in a lot of ways, but I knew I had a husband who really supported my independence.
Yeah.
And, he did have my back on everything. He wanted me to have all kinds of friends and do my own thing. And I do believe that is why I survived and could do this, because I was married to somebody for so long who reminded me how strong I was and how I could do all of the things.
Oh my gosh. Trisha, that is so good, because I feel very the same.
Yeah.
Like very the same, like it empowered me for years to be like, you've got this. You can do this.
Mm-hmm. And I would say I talked to somebody early on when I first decided to date who was a widow who had gotten remarried pretty fast. And she was an older widow who married a widower, and neither one of them had been single for very long when they chose to marry. And they had known each other before losing their spouses. And I had talked to her and she said, Trisha, the fact that you want to date and marry again, even if it is so soon, is a testament to the amazing marriage that you had.
Yes.
And she said, that that is God speaking, like, you had something awesome and you want that again.
Yeah.
And that you believe that it can be that good, that it's worth having again.
100%.
And so it made such a huge difference to me to just feel like there was somebody who was on the other side of it saying, hey, like, no one else, she said, the second part of what she said was, when you are crying and, you know, alone and getting into bed at night, which was the hardest thing for me. Mm-hmm. She said, where are they? And she said, where are those people who don't want you to get married again and to do life with somebody? Yeah. Where are they on those really hard nights?
Yeah.
And she's like, because if they are climbing into bed and grieving with a spouse or somebody that's comforting them, she's like, then they don't understand where you're at.
Right. And that's really it. It's understanding where mm-hmm. our hearts are, doing the work to get to a place where you're ready to date. I went on my very first date, I think 2 years or 3 years later. I had a really good friend that was like, listen, you're beautiful. You're this, you're that. We're putting you on match.com. And I'm like, I'm gonna do all like the back work, and I'm gonna, you know, message mm-hmm. people, and I'm gonna set you up on a date. And she was like, all right, on Tuesday at 6 p.m., you have to be at, you know, this restaurant. And I was like, you know, okay, fine. Like, I wasn't ready. Like, I wasn't ready to be there, but I showed up. And I remembered thinking to myself, I showed up at this place. The gentleman that I met did not look like his profile. So it was like the classic, like, you're not who you said that you were. Uh-huh. And, you know, I don't even know why I'm here to start with. But I was so angry because I was like, I've paid a babysitter. I've like mm-hmm. got myself pulled together. I made dinner for my kids and then left and, you know, yada, yada. And I'm here and you're not even like worth my time.
Who you're, uh-huh.
Yeah, you're not worth. I was like, I have so many more better things to do. Like, I am out of here. And
yep.
that struggle, I think, is real. And that's like, I mean, we could talk about the struggle on the internet for probably 7 hours.
I could say a lot about that. And yeah, I always make sure, and I tell people this all the time, I don't just go out on a date with somebody right off the bat.
Like,
we're going to talk for a little while first, because one, I'm not paying a sitter unless I think you're worth my time. And two, I make sure I'm clear about my expectations and my boundaries before that, because I'm not going to waste your time either.
Yeah.
And so we have to talk enough for me to be able to have some of these conversations to know whether I want to waste time and a babysitter. Right.
I mean, the struggle of the internet, but it's also, for today's day and age, it's reality. Like, that's where
it is.
It's gone are the days. And I mean, maybe you can find someone at church or in normal situations, or maybe a friend of a friend setting you up, which is a whole nother conversation. I really mm-hmm. thought that from my friend group that someone would like bring me a knight in shining armor and be like, Dana, I know this yeah. amazing human being. He's a boss at his life and yada, yada. And I am going to set you up with him. I didn't have one person.
Yeah. Where are those people?
And if you're listening to this podcast right now and you know a widow or a widower and you know someone amazing that you think that they might like, that is a conversation that you can broach. You can ask each one of them, like, hey, I know an amazing person. Would you like to be set up?
Everybody, are you interested?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Everyone wants to meddle and give advice, but that would actually be helpful if you know someone that would be amazing without any strings attached. Nobody needs to get married from it, but like, maybe you can make a connection. So there is a takeaway from us chatting. But going back to this, like, let's unpack the healing, because I also know that at that 2 year mark, when a very dear friend who I'm appreciative that she kind of, you know, kicked my hiney in the right direction, even though I wasn't ready, it took me years to get to a place where my heart was ready. Mm-hmm. Like, if you asked me, you know, are you open to be married again? Do you want to be married again? I would say yes. But I wasn't in the mental space where I was ready to move forward, because I hadn't mm-hmm. dealt with my grief. I kept suppressing it and suppressing it and suppressing it to show up and do all of the things for my life and be there for my kids and
be a mom
and do all mm-hmm. of my other jobs, putting myself last in that regard. But also I didn't know what to do. Like I was like, I didn't even know like what I needed to do to get to the place where you're not over grief, because you're always going to grieve the loss of that amazing yes. human, but to the place where your heart is open. So for you, what did that look like?
So I spent a lot of time that first 6 months after losing Ben reading my Bible and studying God's word and just sorting through what life looked like coming to peace with the fact that my life does not look like what I thought it would mm-hmm. look like. And the summer that I lost Ben, Proverbs 31 Ministries did a study on the book of Job. So I was 2/3 of the way through that study of the book of Job when I lost Ben. And I was not prepared to lose Ben. And I had a really hard time finishing reading the book of Job, because mm-hmm. the end of that study and the end of the book, it talks about how God gave Job back like way more than what he had lost. Like he had replaced everything that was lost. And I spent, you know, several months saying like, no, like yeah. that is not the way it works. Like
yeah.
it can't replace what was lost. Like you've still lost something. Like you might get something else, but it's not a replacement for what was lost. And I don't know how Job could move forward, you know, mm-hmm. with a better life and blessed when he lost something amazing that mm-hmm. he didn't want to lose. Mm-hmm. And so it took me, you know, that period of time of, you know, fighting with that and myself and knowing that, you know, there can be good on the other side of something bad. There can be good on the other side of something tragic. We just have to be willing to say that, okay, God, you are good. This is not what I wanted. This is not how I expected things to go. But I know that you have something for me on the other side of this. Mm-hmm. And I had to accept that for myself. I had to choose every day to get up and say, mm-hmm. okay, I believe that there is still good to come. Now, there are parts of me that still struggle with that. I struggle with that for my kids, because mm-hmm. how can, like, whether I remarry or don't remarry, how can another man ever have the same impact on them that it would have had for them to have their amazing dad who prayed for them, who longed for them? No one will ever have the same vested interest in them that I do. Mm-hmm. And I still struggle with that, because that is the side of loss that sticks. And so yeah. when I see kids with their dads and, you know, dads taking their kids on trips and, you know, father-daughter weekends and father-son things, I think my kids will never have that. And what do I do with that?
Oh my gosh. Yes.
But I do believe that it is possible that God will bring somebody into my life that will fill a role in their lives, that they'll mm-hmm. see what a healthy relationship looks like, because I do long for them to see that, mm-hmm. That they'll see what it's like to have a parent on earth, because yes, they have, you know, God the Father, he is a father figure to them, but that's not the same as having a dad who's there, you know, to dance with you at your wedding or to walk you down the aisle or to cheer for you at sporting events and things like that.
Right.
So those are things I still grieve the loss of.
Oh, for
I have
sure.
not moved past that. I still grieve the loss of getting into a bed by myself every night. It's yeah. quiet. I like it. I can watch TV now.
Yeah.
But at the same time,
I
miss those things.
Yeah. And you grieve that loss. Like there's so many nuggets that you just dropped. Like you grieve the loss of that forever. Like grieve the loss of their dad, Jason, at every sporting event. Like mm-hmm. you're crushing it at a varsity yep. soccer game. And I have been told by my children not to cheer because I clap at the wrong time. And I learned, I video record the like not good moves. And then I put them on the internet and I'm like, I don't know what to do. And it's like in every one of those little micro moments, I have to communicate to them, your dad would be so proud.
Yes.
Because he was a soccer star. Your dad would have had all the right words. I don't have the right words. He would be so proud. Mm-hmm. But we will never get past grieving that. And I want to go back to the very beginning of what you said about the book of Job and all of the amazing things that you learned. Because when Jason died, I truly felt like I did everything. Like I prayed, like all of the deacons of the church came in, we anointed him with oil, we were taking communion every single day, we were praying, we were praying, we were praying. I came home after he died, and not that I like truly like threw my Bible like under my bed, but I was like, I need a break here, Jesus. Like,
yeah,
I am taking a moment. Like I believed that God had a plan and that everything, he will take care of me, and that I have purpose and meaning in this life and that I will be okay. I believed that wholeheartedly, but I was angry. And I had to work through that anger. So if I was in a Bible study at that time or doing a devotional or reading things, I was like, we taking a break from this for right now. I just am going to try to survive. And at the time, my kids, well, they are still in like Christian private school. So I was like, they can help. I'm going to partner with them. They can help. This is what we're doing. But I like stopped going to church on Sundays. I was like, I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this on Sunday morning. I'm going to make breakfast for my kids and we're going to have family time. And it took me years of healing to recognize. And now part of my healing was that I think that Jason's prayer was answered. Like, I think that God answered his prayer, because his prayer was, I don't want to have this non-curable cancer and live in a bed, a hospital bed in my family room and watch my children watch me disintegrate. Like, he felt very strong in that. And I know that he did, because we definitely had those conversations, but it took me years of growing and doing to get to a place where I was like, you know what, God? Like, I do think that you answered a prayer in this.
Yep.
It just wasn't mine.
It wasn't the one I wanted.
And then
the way I wanted it.
Not the way I wanted it to go down. And then I had to kind of work through that. And I think that was a huge chunk of me being ready to open the next chapter and have my heart be truly available. Because I definitely went on, like, we're here to talk about, like, when is the right time to date. And I definitely, went on a number of dates where my only intention was like, this is somebody fun to have dinner with. Like, this is, you know, I'm having fun, and I can do this fun for 6 months or a year. Like, I have no intention of like being married or taking it any further, but it's like a companion.
Yes. Somebody to enjoy and do something fun with, because everybody else is married.
Right. And that brings up a whole nother like thought in my brain about like, like everybody else being married, and just about how when you do become a widow, you have no social group now to be you have no social group to be part of. So in saying, oh yeah, I'm dating so-and-so, oh, all of a sudden now you're like invited places, because it's like, oh, would you and, you know, Johnny like to come here? Would you and whoever like to come, whatever? And I'm like, oh, I did have friends.
Wait, they actually do things.
Other people do things that I that
do
I wasn't
things.
Doing. And you just needed
to do that.
You just needed a plus one. And that that's like an explosive conversation, because it's like helpful and hurtful all in the same moment. But yes, like dating multiple, like dating people and recognizing that you have to have done the healing. And wherever that healing is, that there's no judgment. If you want to date someone for the rest of your life and never get married, great. If you want to date someone and, you know, do whatever, like, great. Like, you do you. Like, I am 10 years later, I am married now. I got married in the spring. So I have healed and grown and am on to that next place. But I mean, he and I need to do a podcast on this, but
even, you should.
even in like dating the widow, which you talked about earlier, you have to be partnered with someone that is open to the flood of feelings and emotions that come with the fact that you're not done grieving. Like, that chapter's not closed. Goodbye. End of story. Put it on the shelf.
Yes. And it's not because, you know, they're not happy in their relationship with you. It might not have anything to do with their relationship with you. These other things are still there.
Yeah. And especially if you have kids, because like we were just mm-hmm. talking about at the events and at the daddy-daughter dances and at all of these things, they're all triggers, for lack of a better word, to be human, to recognize that you're in this moment and your heart is not fully full because yes. you're longing for what that child is missing. And when you can shift the mindset from, and this is what's key for me, shifting the mindset from, I am sorry for me and I am sad for me in this situation.
Yes.
Years and years of healing. Like for me, I rode the slow train. Like I was not 5 months done with my healing. Like I rode the slow train, like years and years and years. But the healing that I'm like, I still am sad for my kids and I will mm-hmm. always be sad. There are so many yeah. moments where it's like, it just takes my breath away. And I'm like, aw. And I know that I am fully healed from that because I also have a partner now that I can share that with. Yes. Where I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so sad. And getting to that place, I think for when, and you'll have to confirm or tell me your thoughts, but when is the right time to date? It's when your heart is ready to welcome that other person and look for that other person that can complete, like fill the gaps and, you know, be the yin to your yes. yang, like complete you in that regard, but not someone that you're looking for, which I have seen widows do, or even just single people do, find someone just to have someone so that you can go to the date.
Yes. 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 I see way too much of that. And I tell, and this is a conversation I've had with anybody I've gone out on a date with since losing Ben. I want to get married again. I want somebody to do life with, but I do not want that person to complete me. I have to be whole completely on my own. They
Amen.
Have to be whole,
say that again for the people. Amen. Say that again for the people in the back. So, like this is yes. such an important thing. Because you can't expect someone else to complete you. And if you Correct. Are complete and you have worked through your grief and you have worked through the things and it has been 3 days, power to you.
Right. Like, yeah, I was not, 3 days was not like, me. 5 months might have been not right for me either. I wasn't yeah. ready to remarry then. I was ready to date, but I was not ready to get, even 2 years yeah. down the road, I was not ready to get married again.
Yeah.
But I think that healing and being healthy are, and whether that's, you know, that might be through widowhood, that might even be through divorce or yeah. something else.
Grieving
you
of
have
something.
To get, correct. You have to process that loss and that grief to be able to be in a healthy relationship with somebody else. Mm-hmm. Because you can't have a healthy relationship with somebody if you're not completely healthy and that person is not completely healthy.
100%. And I feel like when we talk about when are you ready, I mean, I was dating my current husband and would have told you that I wasn't ready. Like mm-hmm. I was ready to be dating, right. but I didn't enter that relationship or, you know, start dating him thinking to myself, oh, we're going to get married. Like this is like this. I'm ready. Mm-hmm. I'm ready. This is the guy. Like it yeah. took years of our relationship where I was like opening my heart more and more mm-hmm. and more and recognizing that in my, it's not a shortcoming for your grief, but in my grief journey that he was there to partner with me. And yes. help us grow closer together, but together. And mm-hmm. so there was never really an aha moment. I don't know if you have had like an aha moment. I wasn't like, oh, today's the day, like the sun is shining and I'm going to go look for me a husband. Like I think that's not what happened, but it's mm-hmm. enough healing that you're like, okay, I'm open to dating. And then being complete yourself and not trying to find someone to fill those voids, but finding someone to partner with and be like, how,
yes,
let's dream the two of us. How would we want our life to work? How would we want it to look? Mm-hmm. Do we believe the same things? Do we want the same things? And then meshing those things together.
Yeah. Which at this stage in life for me is a whole different, I did try after that long longer relationship after losing Ben, I said last summer, I was like, I'm going to get online. I'm going to date to just date. I was thinking about moving and I was like, I don't want to, but I learned that was not for me. That process did not work for me because I can't talk to a bunch of people at the same time.
No.
And I just don't see a point in dating just to date.
Right.
I dated one person for a long period of time and that, both of us decided that that was not a healthy relationship. And so I knew this summer when I decided I was ready to date again, I knew that, you know, that person needs to be healthy. They have need whatever has happened to them in the past. They need to be healed from. I also knew that I wanted somebody who wanted the same things as me. So I was way more selective because I did not want to get feelings for somebody that was not going to be the right person for me to have feelings.
Yeah. But in order to know how to be selective, you have to know who you are.
Absolutely.
And do that work and not be lost. Our hope for you, if you're listening to this, is that you will do the work, and we hope that we can empower you by this conversation to step into what you believe and not be afraid to run in your own lane.
Yeah.
Because there is no time. It is your life, and we are empowering you to run it in the way that you choose, because there's really no manual for widowhood. Mm-mm. It's so many variables of how old are your kids? Where are you in life? Where were you in your previous marriage? Like, where were you with your husband? Happy, sad, you know, all of those things. And we can share these fun stories. I hope that you've enjoyed the stories, but we hope that you will learn from them, right? Learn from our examples and our mistakes. And really empower yourself to step into who God has called you to be and know that.
Yeah.
Know that in your heart. So, Tricia, tell us how we can follow you on Instagram and on Facebook and all of the places you are at. What is your handle?
I blog at Choosing Joy in Every Moment. And so that is where I am on Instagram and also on Facebook. And it's Choosing Joy in Every Moment. That was the lesson that God taught me in the midst of grief, is that we can choose joy for right now and continue to keep choosing joy. So,
oh my gosh, I absolutely love that. And you have a journal also. Can you share?
I do. I have a journal for widows, and it is called Flourish, and it is on Amazon, and it walks through prompts for every letter of Flourish, like feeling all the emotions, leaning in for support. It talks about, you know, trusting in God, and then all the way up to, you know, being able to honor the past and look to the future.
Oh my gosh, so I love that.
There are prompts that help walk the way through that. I will say on the note of dating and knowing if you're ready, is you don't have to listen to every voice that speaks into you, but it does help to have one good friend or somebody that knows you well enough to hold you accountable and to help speak truth to you. And I did have that. I had two dear friends who, no matter what everyone else was saying to me, they knew my heart. They knew where I was in my grief, and they were able to speak words of wisdom to me. And I do think that that can help considerably for people who aren't sure if maybe they're ready. And just like you said, your friend helped set up a date for you. Mm-hmm. That was somebody who thought maybe you were ready and was somebody that you would be able to talk to about it afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Knowing your heart and finding your tribe is key in all of this. And I will say that when I come back to, I rode the slow train because I was overwhelmed and I couldn't get out of my own way. Like, I had to do that inner work. And in order to do that inner work, like, I had to help balance my stress hormone, which is something I talk about in a lot of other episodes, but getting that stress managed so that you can lean in to understanding what you think. I will link Tricia's journal in the show notes and all the places that you can find her. And if you have found this episode to be helpful, we would just be honored if you would share it with a friend And we hope that you have an absolutely amazing day. Thank you, Tricia, so much for joining me. This has been absolutely amazing.
Oh my goodness, that episode had so many great moments. I absolutely love talking with Tricia and other widows, understanding their perspective and how each one of us is just unique. I hope that through this podcast, you feel seen and that you found value in our conversations. And always, I hope to empower you to do the work to run in your own lane. While this was a very serious topic about choosing when to date after grieving the loss of a spouse or maybe a marriage that ended, your timeline to date is going to be different than anyone else's. So I hope that you've taken that weight off of your shoulders. In episode 11, I talk about stuffing your feelings and how I truly know that stuffing my feelings and not leaning in to do the work certainly kept me stuck for longer than I needed to be. Lowering the overwhelm from my day to day was a critical part in me leaning in to heal. But I didn't know how for years. And then I was introduced to a supplement protocol that almost instantly helped me lean in to do the work to grow through grief. If you're interested in learning more about the supplements that made this impact on my life, and I know that it can do for you too, you can go to danalewis.com/supplements and learn all about the protocol that I started on and I'm still on today. If you know anyone that's in a place where they're grieving the loss of a relationship and trying to navigate through this journey, I would be honored if you would share this episode with them. Until next time, remember that it's up to you to show up for yourself and create the life that you desire.
Remember to show up for yourself unapologetically, because while your circumstances may not be 100% your fault, your life is 100% your responsibility. I cannot wait to see you soar.